28, and at Willard Airport in Champaign at the moment, it is cloudy and 37, dew point of 25 and a wind chill of 24. At Friends Plaza in Urbana, right outside of our studios, it is 36 degrees with a wind chill of 30. You're listening to WILL AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store. Strawberry Fields offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, and pet foods. Strawberry Fields on Springfield Avenue in Urbana.
And today we're going to begin part one of our series on political dynasties in Illinois. For some people, politics is a family affair in this state, as Jim Meadows finds out in the first part of WILL's special series.
Todd Satterthwaite's political career includes three terms as mayor of Urbana and a spirited, if unsuccessful, bid for the Illinois House. His father, the late Cameron Satterthwaite, was a scientist with a lifelong interest in politics. After moving to Champaign-Urbana in the 1960s, Cameron Satterthwaite was the 1966 Democratic challenger to longtime Republican Congressman William Springer. Springer won re-election easily, but it was still an exciting time for 12-year-old Todd Satterthwaite and his siblings.
Well, of course, we kids enjoyed doing some of the campaign activities. I mean, obviously, we weren't involved in campaign strategy or anything, but we would accompany Dad to the county fairs, and I can't remember. It must have been 12 or 15 counties, and so we would go to the county fairs with him during the summertime. We operated the mimeograph machine for him at home and cranking out campaign material and so forth, and had some of the campaign keychains and stuff like that, and were helped to give them out. So we were, you know, involved in just the small things that younger kids could do.
Cameron Satterthwaite stayed active in politics, but it was his wife, Helen, who eventually won elections in Illinois. Mrs. Satterthwaite was elected to the Illinois House on her second try in 1974 and served a total of 18 years in Springfield. Once again, young Todd Satterthwaite was part of the campaign.
Yes, I worked on her campaigns. One of the first campaigns, she still had pretty much of a fledgling operation. My responsibility was to do door-to-door in a couple of precincts, and it was amazing, after seeing the results after the election of how effective that door-to-door campaigning could be compared to a precinct that hadn't been worked.
Your own interest in politics, do you think that would have happened anyway, or do you think having a couple of politically active parents really made a difference?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that having politically active parents made a difference. You know, it is difficult for people that just start out, and if you don't know some of the precinct committee people that are in the party, whether Democratic or Republican, if you don't know who has been active workers and volunteers, then it's a little more hard to get your organization together.
When did you first do something formal in politics besides working on your mother's campaign?
Well, that would have been when I ran for mayor in 1993.
Did you lean on her and your father for advice in any way?
Well, of course. Of course, I'd had their advice over the years, and ran the campaign very similarly to, the campaigns that my mother had run for state rep for years. I mean, Urbana was smaller than the state representative district, but a lot of the campaign strategies were the same.
Okay. Do you have kids right now?
No.
Nephew, niece, cousins?
Yeah, it's nieces and nephews. I think there's three nephews in town right now, and I guess all the nieces are out of town.
Any of them showing an inclination to?
I haven't seen a single one that has shown an interest in politics, really.
That's Todd Satterthwaite, who served three terms as mayor of Urbana, losing a bid for a fourth term to the current mayor, Laurel Prussy, in 2007. Since then, he's moved to Champaign and has stayed active in politics. Todd Satterthwaite is currently helping Les Stratton in his run for Urbana mayor. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. Autism can limit a person's ability to communicate and connect emotionally. And this isolation has led to a belief in some people that autistic people may be more prone to commit acts of planned violence. Claims like this, that a link may exist between neurological diseases and mass murder, is echoed around TV talk shows and many news outlets following mass shootings in Colorado and last year, Connecticut. Today, an outspoken young artist with a mild form of autism wants to help set the record straight for those who don't understand the way that his brain works. Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray brings us this story.
In the living room of his family home in Urbana, Quinn Kahneman shows me a brightly colored tangle of metal wire. It's a wearable sculpture he shared with his classmates at Chicago School of the Art Institute.
It's something that reaches out to people for the wearer. So if you were to put the helmet on, you would all of a sudden be automated when it comes to trying to emotionally reach out to someone.
Since his diagnosis at age 8, Quinn has learned to use art to reach out to others.
It was so interesting to see all the people put on the helmet and all of a sudden become awkward little people that were struggling with the same things that I struggled with.
Like many living with Asperger's syndrome, Quinn has difficulty interacting socially. The 18-year-old artist paints me a picture of life with high-functioning autism. He says it's like climbing a mountain, constantly looking out for falling rocks. During our conversation, I notice him stumble only slightly.
Why can't it be considered something that's just alternate instead of negative compared to positive?
Apologizing when his mind goes on a tangent is a childhood habit he's trying to break. As a young white male, he now faces a more serious obstacle: the social stigma fueled by speculation in the media that those like him are somehow more prone to acts of violence. We watch a clip on my phone, TV host Joe Scarborough speaking on MSNBC following the mass shooting in Aurora, Colorado.
As soon as I heard about this shooting, I knew who it was. I knew it was a young, white male, disconnected from society. It happens time and time again. Most of it has to do with mental health. You have these people that are somewhere, I believe, probably on the autism scale.
Joe Scarborough goes on to say that he has a child with Asperger's, but Quinn stops the video before we get that far, his face flushed. He says it's frustrating and scary when people assume that differently wired brains are violent brains.
Autism doesn't make anger. Autism makes fear. Autism makes discomfort, but none of those lead to violence.
Licensed clinical counselor Julie Alderman with the Autism Program of Illinois agrees.
What ASD is it's a neurological developmental disability. It is a very different thing from a mental health issue. It is a developmental disability.
Alderman's center at the Hope Institute in Springfield offers family counseling and professional training for those impacted by ASD, autism spectrum disorder. She says her clients are more often victims of violence or bullying than the other way around. And today, she says those like Quinn Kahneman face a new threat.
With the new DSM-5 criteria, it's just going to be a lot more focused. There is concern among that population that they will lose their identity.
That's because the American Psychiatric Association voted to remove Asperger's from the latest edition of its widely used reference text for doctors, the DSM. The term autism spectrum disorder will now apply to 5 autism-related diagnoses that researchers found weren't consistently applied in clinics across the U.S. Those behind creation of a severity spectrum say it will allow for more accurate diagnosis and help further research into what causes autism. Quinn Kahneman, who's embraced Asperger's and identifies himself as an Aspie, says those changes will likely mean more stereotypes and stigmas for him to cope with.
It puts people like me in a tough situation because we don't want to face the label of autistic when we're grouped in with people who can't function on their own. We don't want people to think that about us.
At age 13, Quinn published Through My Eyes, A Life with Asperger's. The teen author says he wrote it as therapy and to help other kids. In 2013, he may want to sharpen a pencil or dust off his keyboard. Kids could use a revised self-help book to go with their doctor's revised diagnostic manual. Somehow, Through My Eyes, A Life with Mild Autism Spectrum Disorder just doesn't have the same ring to it. I'm Peter Gray.
WILL programming is made possible in part by the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, presenting Les Miserables from Friday, February 22nd till Sunday, March 3rd. More information is available at 217-728-7375 or online at www.thelittletheater.org.
A And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 11th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of Joy Williams, born in Chelmsford, Massachusetts, in 1944. Went to college in the Midwest, decided she needed to live someplace more mysterious and exotic, moved to a trailer park in northern Florida, surrounded by swamps and snakes. She said, "I was miserable, of course, but it was all very good for my writing. It's good to be miserable and a little off balance." The result was her first novel, State of Grace. This is the week of Valentine's Day, a good time to think about love letters. Everyone has written them, including people you wouldn't guess had, such as Napoleon, the Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte, who fell in love with an older woman, his beloved Josephine. One day, the year before he married her, he wrote, "I wake filled with thoughts of you, your portrait, and the intoxicating evening which we spent yesterday have left my senses in turmoil. I shall see you in 3 hours. Until then, mio dolce amor, 1,000 kisses." He wrote letters to Josephine from all across Europe when he was out waging war. The year they married, he wrote to her, "I have not spent a day without loving you. I have not spent a night without embracing you. I have not so much as drunk one cup of tea without cursing the pride and ambition which force me to remain apart from the moving spirit of my life. In the midst of my duties, whether I am at the head of my army or inspecting the camps, my beloved Josephine stands alone in my heart, occupies my mind, fills my thoughts. I ask of you neither eternal love nor fidelity, but simply truth, unlimited honesty. The day you say, 'I love you less,' will mark the end of my love and the last day of my life. My soldiers are showing inexpressible confidence in me. You alone are a source of chagrin to me. You alone are the joy and torment of my life. Nature has endowed me with a virile and decisive character. It has built ours out of lace and gossamer. My heart, obsessed by you, is full of fears which prostrate me with misery. I am distressed not to be calling you by name. I shall wait for you to write it. If you love me less, you can never have loved me. In that case, I shall truly be pitiable. Bonaparte." Here's a poem for today by Nancy Willard, "The February Bee."